Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for downloading the Corner Office Podcast. Another episode for you today. This time, Julie Wainwright, the CEO of The Real Real. That's a company that buys and sells authenticated luxury consignment goods. Think pre-owned, secondary market, or new with tags. Things like luxury brand handbags, clothing, watches, shoes, lots more, actually. Before Julie Wainwright founded the company, she was the CEO of Pets.com, had lots of experience working in that e-commerce industry. So I went to The Real Real's e-commerce center out in Secaucus, New Jersey. Well, we jumped right in.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Hello, I'm Julie.
Hey, Julie, Kai Rizdahl, nice to see you. How are
nice
you?
Nice to meet you.
Are we right in it?
This is it. It's the whole thing. We are right in it. That's the way radio works, man. Okay. We stick a microphone in your face and we start talking. That's the way it goes.
So you're going to take a tour.
I think what I want you to do is show me around.
All right. So we're going to start. We're going to actually, I want you to close your eyes as we walk through a long hall because we want to start at the beginning.
Really?
Well.
So are you going to like hold my hand and guide me? I mean, am I actually closing my eyes?
You won't be able to. It's so narrow, you're going to be bouncing off the walls. It's good.
Perfect. This is going to make good radio.
The thing I want you to think about.
Yeah.
When you go through this.
Okay. I'm not going to close my eyes. I'm going to look down.
All right. But I want you to think about everything you see will be gone in 90 days. All right? Everything.
Wow.
That's how fast
you're turning over your inventory.
We are turning over everything.
Wow.
So.
Which speaks to a lot of things, right? Demand and interest and your members wanting new stuff, all of that.
I'm going to go this way. Yes. Okay. Don't slip on that. We got a lot going on over
really.
Here.
Yeah, floors are being cleaned.
Always got to keep a clean.
Huge.
We just signed a lease for 3 times this size because, as you're going to see, we're in trouble.
You're in trouble? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we have so much product, and we're growing so quickly that this warehouse is going to be just sort of a hub and spoke.
All right, wait, let me just stop you, because we're walking by
kinds
of cool stuff.
No, I don't want you to
really
look at it yet.
Seriously?
No.
All right, because I want to get back to that, the mannequins and the photography thing.
No. That is a whole world that you haven't seen yet.
All right, wait. Who's in charge of this interview? That's what I want to know.
No, I just want you to get the flow.
All right, okay.
That's
all right.
Like a mannequin where you're going to see a world of mannequins.
Okay.
And you should know they all have their own name. They all have their own attitude.
So we should just say, let me set the scene here, right? There are racks going by full of clothes. There are little plastic containers full of buttons and accessories and belts and handbags. And I guess those are all individual orders, right?
This is coming in. This is what we get in every day.
All right. Got it.
All right. Okay. So we're going to stop here.
Is this
here.
The start now? What
are
we doing?
Now, so this is receiving.
Okay.
All right. So you want to walk them through what you're doing?
Yeah. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Nice to meet
you. I'm Kai.
Christine.
Nice to see you, Christine. Tell me what you are doing.
Yes. So what I'm doing right now is receiving an item in this consignment.
What is that item?
So this is a pair of Miu Miu sunglasses.
Miu Miu sunglasses?
Yes.
They make shoes too, right?
They do. They make clothing.
How about that? I knew that Miu Miu made shoes, too.
Oh. So with the receiving process, what's really important is that we're making sure that everything is in good condition.
Okay, but wait. Hang on a minute. So somebody had this in their closet, wasn't wearing it, and said, I'm going to sell this on consignment at The Real Real, right? Is that the way this works?
Yes, that's correct.
And they went online, they established an account, right, and sent it to you?
We may have gone to their house.
Oh, wow.
So we have 250 people across the U.S. that will literally come in, they'll consult with you, they'll pick up everything, see that white bag?
Yeah.
They'll literally pack it all up, schlep the bag out, and take care of it.
Okay. All right, so you get this here now, and what do you do with it?
So what I'm doing right now is just checking the condition, making sure that it's in good condition, that it's something that we want to take, and then I'm going to receive it right now.
Like, literally, just, like, click the button that says, okay, we got this.
Yes.
Okay. Well, why don't you do that? Let me get out of the way so you can actually go to work. And then what happens? And then it's up to be bought, right?
No. But then it goes to authentication.
Okay. Is that where we're going next?
Yes.
All right, that's where we're going next. We got to go. Bye.
All right. So then we walk over because there are a lot of fakes in the world.
Yes, there are.
And we don't sell fakes. So we have to authenticate items as they come in, and what you're going to see is a authentication in process right now for a Birkin.
Aren't these like those zillion-dollar bags?
Yeah, they're pretty expensive.
Right? Hi, I'm Kai.
Giselle.
Nice to see you, Giselle.
To meet
How
you.
Are you?
Good,
so
thank
if
you.
If that's real, it will sell for about $10,000 to $12,000. Oh yeah, and you should know it appreciates. So next year it may be worth more.
All right, I will just editorialize here and say that's nutty, but okay. I mean, come on, $10,000
right.
No, look, I get that there's a market for that, but $10,000 is a lot of money for a purse.
It is a lot of money, which is great that there's an aftermarket.
Yeah, right, exactly. And actually, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But walk me through what you're doing here. So
sure.
you are how qualified to decide that this is a real bag?
I'm very qualified.
Okay, how?
I've worked in resale for about 5 years in the luxury market. And so with that comes a lot of training and experience working with multitude of brands. And, you know, after coming to the real world, I did appreciate, you know, how much resources that we do have and working on such a large team that we're able to kind of help each other with what we know and build on top of that.
So how long does it take you to authenticate this bag?
Because
you got to hustle the inventory out the door, right Julie?
Absolutely.
And you can't waste a whole lot of time on authentication.
Yeah. We're not a warehouse, we're a weigh station.
Right.
That's right. We're moving things through.
Right.
I'd say, you know, on average to do a Birkin, probably about 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad. That's
not too bad. Sometimes it may take a little longer if it has, you know, something new from a newer year or maybe a color or a leather you may have not seen before. But typically I'd say that's about average for that.
And you're looking at what? Like stitching and just general quality
checks? Looking
check
at
stuff.
The quality of the stitching, looking at the hardware, making sure the year that it's saying it is matches that color that came out for that year. Absolutely.
So look, there's a little bit of wear on this bag. Like
absolutely.
The bottom is scuffed and somebody's still going to pay $10,000 for this bag?
Well, this one might go a little less.
All right. There's some wear, right?
But it is a classic Hermes orange, and so that does have a desirability factor.
Aha. So is this real, do you think?
Yes, it is.
All right. Okay. Then I'm going to touch a $10,000 bag, and then I'm going to move on. Why did this business start? What was the need that you saw?
Personally, I was looking at opportunities in the e-commerce space that Amazon couldn't replicate. That's what I originally had in my head. I wanted to start a company.
And we should say here, you've had experience, right? There was pets.com and real.com. And you've been around e-commerce for a long time.
For a long time. And I've watched the rise of Amazon and their power, and I have tremendous respect for them. So I was looking for an area where they couldn't replicate a business. I had no ideas.
Why can't they do this? What happens if Jeff Bezos wakes up tomorrow and says, you know that Julie Wainwright, she's got a good business going, and I'm going to destroy it?
Well, that's always the way he thinks about everything, right? No matter. So that's, I mean, I don't know if it's not really about me, but I would say any business that becomes big, he's like, I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
But here's what's different here. Every single thing you see here is from an individual. And so we have salespeople everywhere that go in and consult. That's number one. Number two, they're not set up for single SKU. So what you're seeing...
Single SKU.
Yeah,
SKU, right?
Well, what I mean by that is if you buy something on Amazon, there's probably 10 more right behind it that can be sold.
Those little barcodes, the SKUs.
Right. Yeah. Everything here is unique. We can only sell one. All of this works together at a really good, efficient cost per unit for us.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to replicate. There's now 7 years of knowledge. There's process. There's software that's driving this. So I would say that anyone could have done this business 5 years ago. Now it's hard to catch up. It's a difficult business.
How, though, do you control inventory? How do you know that you're going to need, in 3 months' time, 10 more of those $10,000 Birkin bags?
We don't worry about it. What we do is... we generate a lot of interest in the business. We have 9 million members now.
Yeah.
When they're ready to consign, we're there. But our goal is to remove friction from consigning and explain the process of consigning to people. 50% of our consigners have never consigned before. So what you're not seeing is the front end of the system. And part of the front is a lot of inquiries coming in, and our team calls them. They send people out to their home. We have vans, especially in Manhattan, vans that drive around all day and pick up things. We have gemologists that are front-facing, so we in our Midtown office in New York, but we have 12 offices across the U.S. You can book an appointment and get a free evaluation of your fine jewelry and watches with no charge. Because, to be honest, if people want to consign it, we're ready. If they're not, that's fine too. So we're really sort of educating the consumer.
Which I get, and maybe this is an oversimplification, but inventory control on the intake end for you is, let's see what's out there.
No, it's not that simple because because here's what happens. We know what sells, so we have a curated list of things that we take. We don't take all brands. We don't take all things. And the reason is we know what sells.
Right.
So we don't want to bring something in we can't sell for you, and we certainly don't want to bring something in that we would lose money in. So therefore, our focus more on the high end.
What was the insight that got you to consignment, not typically a high-end thing, combined with the luxury high-end goods?
So here's what happened. You know, as I my brain works like a marketer, and I'm an observer of behavior. Yeah. So I was out shopping with a friend in a store that had a little consignment in the back, and that's where she spent her money. And I've never seen that behavior before. So when she walked out, I'm like, what just happened there? I've never seen you buy consignment. She goes, I didn't look at it that way. I looked at, I bought Prada and Chanel and Gucci. I didn't, you know, who cares if it's previously owned? And I said, had you ever gone in a consignment store? She said she never would. Would you ever shop on eBay? She said, no, too many fakes. I don't want to shop there. So I thought, oh my, I had no idea how big the luxury space was.
Right.
But what I knew is I just witnessed someone walk into a beautiful store, buy and do something she would normally wouldn't do. And the barriers were not a great shopping environment before in a consignment store and too many fakes. So I figured, all right, if the market's big enough and I solve those two problems, it's huge. And then I tried to consign.
Right. I mean, and, you went through your closet, right?
And it was like a nightmare because, I mean, you know, you meet nice people in the consignment store, but then you chase your money and they can't, you know, it was the power of the internet bringing this huge population to look at each item. It seemed like a natural, but a lot of work. Anyway, so then I ran as fast as I could. It turns out that $60 billion go into the U.S. every year in personal luxury products.
Wow.
So we consume a lot, and then you start aggregating what happens to those goods. Yeah. Mostly they're in people's closets.
Well, they are, right? Which gets us to this idea of the circular economy, which is taking these things that are in people's closets as they were in yours and getting them back out into circulation and making a business of
it. Oh, it's so exciting, and it makes sense. And then the other thing I had to educate myself on is really what happens to products that actually get either at sent off to maybe Salvation Army or Goodwill. A lot of them end up in landfill.
Yeah.
And really thinking about these products are created, they're expensive products, they're created with a lot of craftsmanship. Getting them recirculated just makes sense.
Yeah.
It's good for the planet. It's good for your, you know, it's good for your wallet.
Well, right. Yeah. It's your closet as investment, right?
Well, yes. We're a little bigger. You're not seeing, we actually had to move our home division across the street.
Yeah.
We also do home and art. Which is great.
So what could you not do? What, I mean, you know, you've got clothing, you got jewels, you got watches, you got home and art.
What we wouldn't do is wine.
Oh.
And because you really can't tell the authenticity of it, and there's too many horror stories out there. And we looked at doing cars, and cars didn't make sense either. Hmm. The market's too big, it's too hard to authenticate. You know, it's a lot of work for a lot less money.
Yeah. And look, it's a business, right?
Right. So So now we're going to go to copywriting. We'll go over this way. So now they're
Why copywriting?
Well, what they're doing is preparing the information online. So they're literally going to be talking about what people read online. And so now you've seen it's been received.
Not copyright, but copywriting.
Copywriting.
Sorry,
copywriting. I misunderstood. So they're describing the items right now online.
Got it.
So that's the next step.
Right.
And then we go.
I'm going. I'm following you. Go.
All right. Then we go to photo.
Oh, are those the mannequins?
No.
No. Sorry. I don't know why I'm hung up on those mannequins.
Oh, you're going to be hung up in a minute. So we're going to take a walk. Now, we have grown so much. We keep moving walls. So the flow isn't optimized. So I'm going to walk you through the warehouse to get to the mannequins, where most of the photo happens.
All right.
So as you walk through here, I want you to visualize that whatever's here will be gone in
90 days. This is like that scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they have all those shelves and shelves of boxes and boxes and boxes.
And yet, it'll be gone in 90 days. So everything is barcoded here, along with sort of two-factor knowledge. So In case a tag falls off, we still know what the item is. All right, now we're going to go into... Sorry, it's a little bit of a walk. Now, you saw some mannequins. Those are the overflow.
All right.
But this is really what happens here.
Oh, wow.
All right, now we're going to go this way.
It's like a fashion shoot, for crying out loud.
It is like a fashion shoot.
God.
And they've divided the way we look at it from mannequins to tabletop. So some people specialize in jewelry and watches. Some people are specializing in mannequin shoots. Now, this is the final stage. So you want to see what's happening over here?
Yeah, so you're taking the pictures of this stuff, and then you're just going to, and then it goes from here to be online, right?
It goes up for, there's a little bit of editing because it has to be cropped and photo-balanced. And then, boom, it goes online. And there is one last merchandising check where they look, did everything work? Is it the right price? We have, you know, pricing algorithms. We have a lot of science behind it. But, yeah, so they're shooting all day long. And once it goes online, usually within 90 days, everything's gone. We... what you missed is we also have gemologists on staff, which we didn't go in. We have watchmakers on staff. You want to see what they're working on? Let's go this way. Let's go this way. I think right now we're number one or number two employer of gemologists in the world.
Wow.
Thank you. We also do fashion shoots. We have another overflow warehouse across the street, which we're doing fashion shoots. We do home and art there, too.
Do you worry about growing too fast at all?
No,
really?
I don't. I think we can only grow as fast as the volume we bring in.
Yeah.
So, no. No, I did. I mean, honestly, I worry about having enough space. I mean... These guys are sort of in a hole right now. They keep moving around. You wouldn't think we keep rebuilding walls and tearing them down and rebuilding them, but we have some of our watchmakers in here. Actually, they're repairing and inspecting watches. Hey, guys. This
hey,
is Kyle.
Sorry, I'm just looking. How are you?
Good.
What you working on?
At the moment?
Yeah. What are you?
I have a Mont Blanc wristwatch. This is a beautiful... steel chronograph that they produced, and we're going to go in here and make sure everything is the way it should be, that's keeping time. We're going to pressure test it, clean it up so that we can get it listed on the site so that some lucky person can own this beautiful automatic watch.
That person will have to spend how much money for this beautiful automatic watch?
Pricing is not my my cup of tea. I'm more the technical guy on these things.
Spitball it for me, seriously. I mean, you have an idea what this is worth.
This probably will sell for between... $2,000 and $3,000, which is significantly lower than its retail value.
Yeah. How did you want? So what's your name, first of all? I'm sorry.
Leif Anderson.
What? Not the Leif Anderson. how did you wind up here?
At the Real Real?
Yeah.
That is a long story that we don't have time for.
Well, give me the short version.
The short version is they found me and. I saw an amazing opportunity to come work for a company that was growing and expanding and really filling a niche in the marketplace that wasn't being filled.
How many of these watches do you do, say, a day?
We shoot to get through at least 30 watches a day.
Is that a lot? I mean, are you hustling to get through 30?
We can be. It depends on the watches. Some of them are easier than others. I mean, obviously, we see everything from your sort of more fashion-oriented watches like Kate Spade all the way up through to the prestige brands like Vacheron Constantin, Mont Blanc, Rolex, and so on.
What's your background? Are you self-taught, a watch guy?
No, I went to school. I've been doing this for 18 years. And before that, I was a jeweler and goldsmith.
Fascinating. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
The cool thing about... A lot of people here, they've been here, some of them, quite a long time already. We're only 7 years old, and we're lucky to have employees, some 5 years old. And some of them started with us. We were in Midtown Manhattan when we started.
Is that right?
And can you imagine running a warehouse?
No, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. In fact, it shut down on the weekends, so we had to, like, override the elevators to get things done. But some of them followed us over here. All right, we want to go this way?
Yeah.
So eventually this is going to be photo overflow again until we get our new space.
So your operations manager must have his or her hands full.
We
right?
have, oh, it's crazy. I mean, you know, very seldom do you think of having a warehouse and having to reset walls. You can see this.
Yeah.
That was yep. just built 2 weeks
yep, that's
ago.
That's all fresh, yeah, yeah. Fresh drywall. There are some questions to be asked about you, literally you in this business, and being a not young, not male founder, right?
Whoa.
Well, no. Let's be honest. And
yeah,
because
okay.
it's different, right? It's different for you going out to try to get that VC money,
right.
to try to make the pitch, right? And I'm sorry if I offend. And I honestly don't mean to,
okay.
but, you know, it must have been a different experience for you is what I'm saying.
Well, look, any woman going out raising capital is hard. And there's multiple stages. And I would say at the beginning, it's always hard for everyone. And, you know, there's stories like Salesforce never got VC funding, for example.
Yeah.
Intuit never got VC funding because you're getting people to buy into a dream. All yeah. right, then you compound the fact that I was an older female. So most of the people I'm meeting with, I could be their mother. You know, which is a little awkward. They all wanted to go backwards and talk about pets.com, which for most of the people I was meeting with, they were like 12.
Yeah, well, it
when
was
it
like
happened.
Ancient history, right.
Right, and so there really wasn't applicable. But I'll tell you what made the difference for me. When I got in front of a female venture capitalist, an early stage female venture capitalist.
Which is tough to do because there aren't many early stage
it's like
female
maybe,
venture capitalists.
I don't know
right.
how many, maybe 10,
right.
you know, in the U.S. And once I explained what I was doing, they got it immediately. And the men would sit there and they'd go, really?
Yeah.
Really? In fact, I had a guy say, really? Women buy a lot of shoes? And I even had data. I mean, I have all this data. There's so much data. And they go, I don't believe the data. I'm like, how can you not believe the data? This is like...
Were you just banging your head against the wall?
Well, yes, but I also knew it was going to happen. So I didn't even go out and raise venture capital till I was $10 million in sales.
Yeah.
And it took about a year to get there because I figured no one's going to believe me at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I also was raising capital in the land of eBay. So a lot of the venture guys yeah. from eBay, you know, started at eBay. So their model was, eBay's fine. I'm like, eBay is fine, but not for this.
Right,
and this is
they're different
a huge
things.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I had that. But, you know, every entrepreneur faces headwinds. I would say, you know, if you have... There is this big fallacy in the Valley that failure's good. The truth is, failure's not good. No one likes to lose money. So when you're out meeting and you have a big failure in your past, people think twice or three times. And then they're like, you have all that experience. That's sort of a story that everyone tells each other. The reality doesn't map.
That's so interesting.
No, it doesn't map. No one likes to lose money.
Yeah.
And why would you place your bet against someone who's lost money? No one feels
right.
good about that.
And here you are with what I understand is close to $1 billion a year in sales. Getting there?
We should be over $1 billion next year if we do our job right. Yeah.
And then what? Right? How big does this get?
Oh, it's huge. Because we're just getting started. When you look at our potential
7 years old, right? $1 billion in sales.
Not yet. Not, that's
well,
next year.
Next year. 8 years old and $1 billion.
Yeah, all right.
I mean,
fair enough. Yeah.
If you're on that trajectory, yeah, it's not like it's not going to happen.
No, it'll happen.
Okay, so what are the headwinds then? What do you worry about?
Right now, I just worry about physical space. If you can see where we are. No, I'm serious, because everything's working right now.
Look, so I get that, right? It's chaos out here
right.
looking around, but clearly there's some system.
Controlled chaos.
Controlled chaos,
yeah.
right? And you, obviously, as you walk me through this place, you had a map in your mind's eye of how everything works. But I'm thinking larger economic headwinds, right?
Right.
I mean, because nobody needs the stuff you're selling, right? It's luxury items. It's disposable income. So what are you worried about big picture?
So, look, this is a business born out of the recession. It's true. So, and I would say when you look at it, what you're getting here is good value for your money. So I think we're going to do really well in a recession. We'll do really well. We're doing really well now. I'm not really worried about it. I'm more worried about what we can control, not what we can't. The truth is, during a recession, my bet is we'll get more goods because people want liquidity. You get more goods and you have a big market and people aren't going to stop buying Gucci. They're just not. they may switch their buying from primary to secondary, but they're not going to stop buying it. And when you think about, and this is something that when we first walk into a consignor who's never consigned, 50% of the people, as I said before, have never consigned. Right. And they get their first check, they're blown away. They had no idea that that money was trapped.
How much of the price, I guess, do they get? How much do your sellers get?
Oh, it depends on the item. So something like that Birkin, probably appreciated.
Yeah.
Something, apparel depreciates the fastest. Huh. And Gucci and Chanel retain value right now. Right. But if they lose, if their designers start mis-executing, that'll drop. So it's not static.
Right.
Some things are sort of static, like Cartier retains its value. Rolex can appreciate. Yeah. Birkins and Kelly bags appreciate. And other things go up and down with the fashion.
Do you know off the top of your head the top, like, three-ish items that you have demand for right now? That your consumers
Well, I know want? The brands.
What are they?
No, so number one brand right now is Gucci. Yeah. Number two is Louis Vuitton. And number three is Chanel. That's new, by the way. So Gucci, it was not the number one in demand before.
Huh.
So it really has risen through the ranks. Louis Vuitton's always strong.
Oh, always, yeah. Is there a menswear division?
Huge menswear. I'm surprised we didn't show you.
I wasn't going to buy anyway. But.
You might. We'll get you.
Look at me. I am no clothes horse.
You still wear clothes. We have something for everyone. So men's are about 24% of our sales and what we get in. We have brick and mortar stores now, too. Well,
so I was going to ask about that. Why did you feel the need to go brick and mortar when clearly e-commerce is your bread and butter?
You know what? Really good question. Because everything you see here, we can sell online. So then what's the purpose?
Right.
So here's what we did. We ran some tests. We did some pop-ups. And what we saw is when anyone walked in the store, they spent more money and they gave us more product. There was something about a trust factor that was more real for some people. And so we ran a couple pop-ups and then we opened one store. And because... what you're not seeing is we have a lot of technology. We have a huge, amazing technology platform, and we are truly omni-channel, meaning that if you buy in the store or you buy online, we have one view of you. If you consign, if we come to your house or you consign the store, we have one.
Mm-hmm.
So we started measuring the incremental impact of having the store, and it blew our mind. It's like it because I think what happens is people see the item, they feel more comfortable transacting.
Having touched it, right? Literally, yeah.
I mean, some of these goods are, you know, $10,000
handbag. I'm going to want to touch that bag.
Of course.
Spend $10,000.
Exactly. And there's gemologists in the store that can talk to you. But if you buy, there's watchmakers that come to the store. The other thing is, if you want to see something, you can have it sent to the store before you buy it.
So you have two stores now. Are you on the way to 50?
No, not that many, but let's say 15 in the near term.
In selected market cities.
Right. And the nice thing is we have a lot, again, data. We have a lot of data, so we know our best markets. We have offices in 12 cities across the U.S., so you can sort of figure out that's where we're going to be.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do every day?
Well, it changes. So for the last 6 years, I've been raising money for 6 months out of the year.
That must be draining, right?
It's got its own rhythm.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people, I get excited when I talk about the company, and I'm used to being told no, so it's good. You know, so for me, it's a little bit, but it takes you out of day to day. Now I'm working on getting the right management team. If we don't have, we have holes, getting that filled, making sure that we're investing enough on technology and looking at that really closely. And really, it's more on the economic side and team side now, and processes.
So, you know, it's interesting. I ask every CEO I talk to that question, pretty much. What do you do every day? And most of them just say, oh, I strategize and, you know, think big thoughts. You're the only one who's ever said, I think about data, and I think about stores, and I think about management team. That's actually really interesting. Yeah, honest to God. Honest to God. Of course, most of those were guys. So
Yeah, there you go. We're down and dirty here, as you can see.
Yeah, well, you are. I mean, you're down in it.
Yeah, we're in it. And honestly, the people that do really well in the company are right there with me.
Huh.
So we hire people. Whenever we hire, and I, unfortunately I've hired these people that, like, want to sit in their office all day, they fail. This is a people-driven, process-driven business, and when you have to get on the floor, you have to think high and act low. And it's, and by the way, and it's so much fun, but it's not for everyone.
Clearly.
Right.
All right, before I let you go, I want to track down those Miu Miu sunglasses. Where did they go?
Oh.
Seriously, I want to see where they are right now, right? Half an hour later.
Where did they go? Where, let's see.
Yes. Can we go find them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Go find them.
We'll go find them together.
All right.
I didn't mean for this to turn into a test.
All right. See the guy with the red hat?
Yes, that's David.
David.
All right. Where are we going? Are we following David still? Where are we going? Where are we going? Is this copywriting too or no? What is this? Okay, all right. No, they were in a pink sort of velvet case.
Yes.
No? Is this too hard?
They might be too late. They might be in photo already.
Let's find the sunglasses. Because that's crazy fast, right? It's 20 minutes.
It's quick. It's very quick.
Who's doing sunglasses today? We're looking for a specific pair that went through copy.
The sunglass stations would be here. Do you have the SKU on you?
I don't.
So they're pink. It's a pink case.
They're Miu
Miu sunglasses.
Okay. They were in one of the pink velvet cases.
Okay. So
they're
in a case, though.
They're in a case.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Pink sort of velvet velour.
This may take a minute.
Yeah.
Well,
they might be here.
We'll give it one more minute. So we got shoes and sunglasses together.
This color?
Is that them? Yes. There you go. So where were they?
They were here.
About to be photographed?
They can be photographed.
Well, no, I mean, that's where they were coming, right? They were coming here to be taken pictures of.
This is the station that they were going to be photographed.
All right, there we go. We found them.
Yeah.
All right, that's excellent. So now we know where they are. Thanks, everybody. We found them. I'm going to call that a win. All right, there you go, Jess. Thanks. Really appreciate it. I found the sunglasses, and let me tell you, it was no easy thing. They move fast over at The Real Real. Anyway, that was my conversation with Julie Wainwright, the CEO of The Real Real. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do get your podcasts, and do me a favor and leave us a review, would you, or share it with a friend. The Corner Office podcast is produced by Daisy Palacios. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Another episode for you in a couple of weeks. We'll be right back.